This week, as always, was another confusing mashup of events and speeches, legislation, posturing. So let's try to put it in perspective.
Powerhouse Roundtable is here to take it all on. We kind of started in the commercial break anyway, but let me introduce you. Rick Christie is the editorial page editor of the Palm Beach Post. Mary Lee Cancio is an attorney with her own named firm in Miami and active in the Republican Party. David Smiley is a political reporter for the Miami Herald. Welcome.
Great to have you all here.
Thank you.
Marley, good to see you, Rick and David. David, let me begin with you. There is a story of the moment that we need to talk about the detention shelter for the migrant kids down in Homestead. Our three Democratic members of Congress from South Florida, Debbie Mukherjee-Powell, whom we just heard from, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Donna Shalala, have said they want to tour that facility, and they have been told they want to do it Monday. And they were told by HHS, no, you can't. You can't come in. And apparently there is, according to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, an amendment to an existing law that says legally they can go in, but they're being kept out. So where do things stand?
2019 feels a lot like 2018 right now when the federal government reopened this facility, which initially is a temporary facility. It was initially opened under the Obama administration when we saw 5 or 6 years ago, a rush of unaccompanied migrant children on the border. Right. And last year, when the Trump administration reopened this facility, around the same time that they began the very controversial family separation policy. This was a highly politicized facility. We saw a lot of politicians, Democratic politicians, trying to visit the facility, being rejected, and Congress changed the law.
And Carlos Curbelo, then a congressman from Republican, tried to visit, was turned away, but then he eventually did get in.
Right. So I think this underscores how politicized this facility is. We are a very prominent and important melting pot in the country, and here you have the only temporary unaccompanied children's shelter in the country run by a for-profit company. And it is expanding for the second time, doubling in size to a 3,200 capacity that, if it's filled for an entire year, would cost around $900 million to run. So,
you know, we were talking earlier, Mary Lee, I was going to say, Mary Lee brought up, like, I love when you do math because it really hammers it home.
Well, because with that money, almost $900 million, what, $750 a day per child, it's over $260,000 per kid. I mean, imagine that kind of money, what they can do with the Northern Triangle of Central America in those countries, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala. Because right now we're talking about removing funds because their governments are not doing enough to keep them from leaving the country. Because that money that we give those countries is to eliminate corruption, to, you know, to make a better life for them. But if they're still coming here and we're spending that kind of money, it's crazy.
And you know, Rick, what's really important to note is in this grand scheme of years and years, because this is, I mean, immigration from the southern border is not a new problem. Mm-hmm. But what is new, according to, by all accounts, everyone involved, is that it's no longer a mass of single men looking for work, as much as families and women and children escaping what I think Jay Johnson had called a burning house. Mm-hmm. Such danger and poverty and drug cartel run governments in Central America.
Right. Again, this is just a microcosm of the problem with our entire immigration system, where we have issues from the way we treat different Caribbean nations differently, and in Europe where we allow people to routinely overstay visas to what we're now experiencing on the U.S.-Mexico border, and as long as we don't come to some type of agreement that first of all this needs to be fixed. But I think the word that's missing a lot of times, or probably the word that they fight over, and nobody really says it, is being humane. And what you're talking about when you're talking about families now and everything, that takes a good deal more humanity than is already built into our system.
Yeah. Well, any mental health expert would tell you, as humanely I think these kids, Glenna has been through this facility, I mean, they are not mistreated, but to be separated from your family for any length of time, and the average, I think, stay there is said to be 52 days. Some kids stay longer, but I mean, imagine being separated from your children for months.
Horrible.
And to be in a massive facility like this, 3,200 children potentially, which is larger than Homestead Senior High, or at least its capacity, you know, you have the potential to be lost in an institution where advocates are saying, we're seeing an unprecedented rush of children on the border. You have to have some place to put them, but in a facility of that size, of that nature, is that the right thing to do?
And you get the sense when you talk to some of them that they, you know, these are really hopeful kids. They feel like this is a good place as a starting point and something better is coming soon when everyone outside the walls doesn't really know what's going to happen with those kids.
Yeah, part of this problem apparently is the bureaucracy, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, HHS, and the private contractor. Marley, I mean, there are some family members of these kids who are not documented. They're in the country. They're afraid to come forward to say, my nephew is there and I will take care of him or her, because if I go in, I'm afraid they're going to fingerprint me or know that I'm not in the country legally.
Yeah. I mean, that's government bureaucracy. What we're seeing there is that we're letting the government take care of these children. They would be much better off with their families. Imagine $260,000 a month to keep these kids there. $500,000. I mean, for a fraction of that, they would have their own home in their own country and be secure.
You know, it was a really, a lot of people found a very troubling moment this week at Homestead when we were there. The protesters who keep a daily vigil there spotted John Kelly on a golf cart right away. We got a glimpse of him, confirmed that he was on a tour there. John Kelly, of course, the ex-chief of staff, ex-DHS secretary.
Ex-lobbyist for Caliburn.
Right, and that's what people find so troubling, is that he was on the board of essentially the parent company of the contractor now running the place. And the whole for-profit aspect of it is, you know, truthfully, in fairness, may or not be in play, but it sure does seem like it. And that's, I think, troubling a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's talk a little bit. We had all, during the break, have been talking about immigration reform and how it is so desperately needed. I mean, the Homestead Shelter is one example. So we're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we will talk about immigration. You'll hear from the president. Welcome back to the roundtable. We're here with Rick Christie of the Palm Beach Post, Marilee Cancio, Miami attorney and Republican Party activist, and David Smiley, who's probably in PA. He is the political reporter
for
the Miami Herald. Well, let's talk, as we have been during the break, about immigration. The president on Friday, before he went to Calexico, talked as he left the White House about the immigration system. He said asylum is a scam. Let's hear what the president had to say.
Congress has to act. They have to get rid of catch and release, chain migration, visa lottery. They have to get rid of the whole asylum system because it doesn't work. And frankly, we should get rid of judges. You can't have a court case every time somebody steps their foot on our ground.
Let's just do this. Let's take the political out of this. As difficult as, you know, President Trump has his way of talking, David, from every party agrees immigration is broken. I mean, that's kind of a bipartisan look. Mm-hmm. So where is the breakdown to fix immigration?
I think politics right now is so much about winning that accomplishing and compromise have completely gone by the wayside. If you look at the two government shutdowns, or maybe it's been more, I don't know, but going back to 2018, there were things that seemed to be on the table and rejected in 2018 that you know, maybe in 2019 or they would have taken or in the last shutdown. And I think that, you know, the party that's in control oftentimes doesn't want to agree to a compromise to the party that's not. And the Democrats don't want Trump to get a victory. The Republicans don't want the Democrats to get a victory, and it gets in the way.
And I agree with what he's saying. And I think the biggest losers so far have been the Dreamers, because the majority of the population agreed that the Dreamers should be given legal status. Right. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of young lives that now have their own children in this country that still live in limbo. And the majority of the voters would support a compromise on Dreamers. And we have stopped talking about them. Well, during Rick, one of the first
Rick's
shutdowns.
Expression
well,
mandates
I just think that they could have done that under Barack Obama and they didn't do it. So, but I think, but overall, you're right. This is too politicized now. And I'd actually, I wish I had a magic wand to say, okay, boy, how do we fix this thing?
A lot of people wish you did too.
You know, one thing I found curious was in the president's statements at the very end there about catch and release and asylum and immigration judges, almost at the very end, I thought, boy, was he changing? Is he ready to change our policy towards Cuba? You know, when he said, just because you set a step foot in this country doesn't mean you ought to be here, which is a policy we've had for quite a while. You know, and so that shows you that there needs to be a lot more thinking about how we want to really do immigration reform. And the biggest thing that I probably disagree with him on in that group of things, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, is that we do need more immigration judges. So that these cases can be processed,
whether they're
allowed in or not. Yeah. You need to process these cases because I do believe we need a lot more immigration judges.
I just saw in a little research I did, the average wait time for somebody who is granted an asylum application to get before a judge, 763 days. 763 days.
And it's going to take even longer for the valid asylum seekers to get a hearing.
Right.
Yesterday I had my nails done by a lady that is from Venezuela.
They look very lovely.
Thank you. But the lady, it's here with her husband and her two kids, and they have been waiting for 2 years to get a hearing. They have not heard anything.
And that's not an unusual amount of time
and
at
Venezuelans
all.
And they're hoping for TPO. And I agree.
Can I switch gears here for a little bit? Because this week, David Smiley had what I think we could all agree, the headline of the week. Pardon me when I read it, because I don't want to get it wrong. Only in Florida could a billionaire's massage parlor pit stop unmask a possible spy ring. You win. You win for that. So, but, you know, all kidding aside, serious concerns about security at Mar-a-Lago. Explain.
Yeah. The president's business at Mar-a-Lago, the ability of people to... for a fee or a political contribution, obtain access to the president or high-level politicians is becoming, I think, at this point, a security concern, without a doubt. And we have seen over the last month or 6 weeks reporting by my colleagues at the Miami Herald that has shown that, you know, what started with reporters poking around New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft's arrest at the Orchids of Asia Day Spa January, has turned into this sort of bizarre web of connections.
So how does the woman from this, who owned this,
Cindy Yang,
who was shown in selfies with President Trump, how is she connected to this other woman, Yujing Zhang, who appeared at Mar-a-Lago this weekend with all kinds of laptops and hard drives and purportedly malware on a thumb drive? Who got into Mar-a-Lago? Right. How are they connected?
Cindy Yang, who founded the day spa where Robert Kraft was caught on video and then eventually charged, we found her because she happened to take a selfie with Trump the night of the Super Bowl, where Robert Kraft's team was winning. And then in looking at her, we found that she was in a number of pictures with a number of politicians, Matt Gaetz, Ron DeSantis, to name a few. And this is because she had created a consultancy of bringing in people from China for a fee to attend, to buy tickets and get two events at Mar-a-Lago, and to hopefully get access to Donald Trump or members of his family to talk about their businesses. And her connection to this woman who was arrested at Mar-a-Lago for allegedly lying to federal agents and trespassing is that this woman who was arrested said she was there to attend an event that Cindy Yang was promoting on Chinese social media.
So we talk a lot about Russian influence. Yeah. I think we need to worry a lot about more about China.
Chinese influence. Well, as our friends Carl Hansen and Dave Berry would say, you can't make this stuff up, you know, and it's going to appear in good reporting by you and your colleagues at the Herald. All right, more roundtable after a break. Welcome back. We are in the midst of a really robust roundtable here, and Rick Christie, Mar-a-Lago is in your backyard. Palm Beach Post covers, you know, obviously what goes on there, and the strange kind of dissonance, cognitive dissonance, what goes on there, and excess of the president and others happened, I guess, when Tokyo Prime Minister Abe was there having dinner in the patio, and then they learned about nuclear testing by North Korea. I mean, you know, missile testing. And
That was where it started,
I mean, that's how it started, but it keeps going on.
Yeah, and as we were talking about that first security, big security questions came up with that when there was, when the president was hosting Prime Minister Abe. And then he got a phone call that North Korea about North Korea missile testing.
And instead of him leaving
and going off to a room to talk about this very sensitive foreign policy issue, he was just there and people were like taking pictures. Yeah. And then there was another incident a week after that where I think Jeff Sessions was caught mixing and mingling with certain guests and everything. This is the former attorney general, and which was also a security issue. And so there have been a few things after that. And I think what we have seen is that there's a the culture was kind of established from the very beginning about access to the president. When you look at Mar-a-Lago, when I think a clear message was sent when they doubled the membership fee from 100,000 to 200,000.
Right.
Okay, why would you pay 200,000? Well, because I expect to have some access to the president of the United States. So I think they established sort of that culture of access from the very beginning with this private club.
Well, it may have to change with Xu Jingzhang. Well, I think now they, because the Chinese or anybody else, $200,000 to get access to the president?
Well, I think, well, the Secret Service.
Chump change.
Yeah, and initially there was a lot of questions from the Democrats on the Hill, you know, in terms of what is the Secret Service doing? Is this place secure?
Asking those questions again.
Yeah, and they are, but they seem to be satisfied by like Thursday or Friday. I think the Secret Service has satisfied them that they were doing everything that they could do or should be doing. Yeah. The issue is Mar-a-Lago and the private facilities themselves. Yeah. Remember, the president also has two golf courses, one in Jupiter and one in West Palm Beach that he attends on a regular basis, playing a lot of golf.
And
at Doral down here in Miami-Dade, or down in Miami-Dade. So the issue really now going forward in terms of security is what they need to do at these private places that the president goes to. I mean, I think he even goes to play golf, maybe in Scotland, or is it New Jersey?
Yeah.
There's a place in New Jersey.
Before we run out of time.
Sorry.
That's all right, you're on point. But we do want to mention the fact that former Broward Sheriff Scott Israel lost his court case this week.
Mm-hmm.
And now he says he's going to appeal to the 4th District Court of Appeal. But Marley, while this is going on, whatever Senate hearing is all on hold. I mean, and it really doesn't legally look promising for the sheriff.
It doesn't, but I think it's a political matter that he wants to continue fighting. Governor DeSantis, I think, who's doing a very good job, has taken the high road and says, you know, he hasn't gotten the message. Speaking about Sheriff Israel.
The governor's suspension cited negligence and dereliction of duty, pretty much. And so what the governor did after the sheriff's case was dismissed was say, hey, let's get it right up to the Florida Supreme Court pretty quickly. He's so confident that the court system is going to side with him, and then it will go to
I think
Senate.
Scott Israel needs to get used to losing, because he's going to lose in the higher courts most likely and lose in the Florida Senate. This is the beginning of the 2020 campaign for sheriff.
Right, and he is running again, he says. All right, thank you all for coming in. Great conversation, great roundtable. Still to come, my personal perspective about political asylum. The president says it's a scam, but it is not.